Okay, good morning, everyone. This is December 14, 2021. It's 9:02 a.m. This is the continuation of the contested case proceeding on the East Maui Water Revocable Permits for 2021 and 2022. Good morning. Could I ask the parties to please introduce yourselves for the record, and if everyone in the room would please turn on your video for the introductions, then you can turn it back off. Ms. Akagi.
Good morning, Trisha Akagi and David Schulmeister, appearing on behalf of A&B and EMI. With us today is Meredith Ching, our client representative, and Nicole Yamane from our office, who is helping with exhibits.
Okay, thank you. And once again, I forgot to introduce myself for the record, Suzanne Case, hearing officer for the Board of Land and Natural Resources. All right, County of Maui.
Good morning, Deputy Corporation Counsel Caleb Rowe on behalf of the County of Maui. I do not have a client representative.
Okay, thank you. Sierra Club.
Good morning, David Frank with the Sierra Club, and Wayne Tanaka, the Sierra Club, is here with us today.
Okay, thank you. And we have a witness and a represent, a attorney representing him.
Yes, Mr. thank Bo- you. Yeah, Bennett Chin for Wilson Okamoto and Dalton Beaupre.
Okay, thank you. And we have our court reporter. Can you just give us a wave? A&B's court reporter. Thank you. Okay, I think that's it. Does everybody have everybody they want? We have a public viewing room in the BLNR boardroom here. No one's there today. Okay, so our witness lineup today is Mr. Beaupre, and then Mr. Tanaka, is that correct? Witnesses for the Sierra Club. And then at 2 p.m., you have scheduled Mr. Chung, and you're going to tell us whether we're going to do that later on. And we're going to have closing arguments tomorrow morning, correct? All right. I think we are ready then. All right, Mr. Frankel, please go ahead. Oh, sorry, Linda Chow, would you please swear or witness in, Mr. Beaupre?
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Beaupre. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Mr. Beaupre, have you talked to anyone at Alexander and Baldwin the last couple of weeks?
No, not recently.
Okay. Can you please describe your role in the preparation of the EIS for the proposed water lease for the Nahiku, Kainai, Honamanu, and Huela license area?
Yeah, so I am a planner at Wilson Okamoto, and I was the grunt worker. I did the day-to-day writing for the EIS in coordination with the sub-consultants.
Can you just, so did you help draft the contents of the EIS?
Yes, I wrote an entire EIS.
You wrote the entire thing?
Yes, with the help of our technical consultants.
And you must have read it back and forth several times.
Yes.
Are the contents of the EIS true and accurate?
Yes.
And I want to ask you about the information in the environmental impact statement regarding how many gallons per acre per day various crops need. Where did you obtain that information?
I'm assuming you're asking about the Mahi Pono farm plan.
Yeah, would it help if I brought up the EIS and the page where it's referenced?
Is it in chapter 2?
Correct, chapter 2.
Okay, yeah, that information came from Mahi Pono, and it was in collaboration with our agricultural technical consultant.
Who was who?
Mr. Bruce Plash.
So I looked at his appendix, and there's nothing in his appendix that Bruce Plash wrote that talks about the actual water needs for any crop per acre. So is that information he supplied to you orally, or is this information that actually just came from Mahipono?
I believe it's information that they worked together that was provided to us by Mahipono.
But you didn't provide the foundation or background information about where these numbers were derived from in the EIS, did you?
No, but it's based on a coefficient study. I do know that.
And who did this coefficient study?
I do not know.
All right. On page, well, let me actually bring this up. I'm going to share a screen if I have been enabled.
Already.
So do you see the first page of your EIS there on the screen?
Yes.
I can never tell what other people can see versus what I can see. So if we go down to page 3-24 of the environmental impact statement, I've highlighted here the sentence, it is understood that approximately 30% of the water in the license area streams is derived from the privately owned lands. You see that?
Yes.
So use the passive voice, it is understood. It is understood by whom?
It's based on the 1938 agreement. So I guess what I was trying to say, it's understood between, I guess now the state and EMI and AMB.
So you see it's understood by the state. Derived from privately owned lands. What does that mean, derived from privately owned lands?
My understanding is the streams in the Ha'iku'uka watershed, the waters that originate from there and then flow through the license area. So that water that's derived, those privately owned lands are the Ha'iku'uka watershed.
So you're saying that water that derives from privately owned lands are different than waters that flow over and derive from publicly owned lands?
Correct.
And when you use the word derived, are you saying the diversion itself is on privately owned lands, or the water flows across privately owned lands before they are diverted from somewhere else?
I'm trying to say the water originates on that privately owned land.
And you don't know if there's any legal basis for any distinction between water that flows over and derives from privately owned land versus other water, do you?
To the extent that he's calling for a legal conclusion.
I'll join.
Mr. Frankel, is there something else you're trying to get at here?
I want an answer to my question.
Okay, would you repeat the question?
God, I wish we had a court reporter to read these questions back. So, do you realize that there's no legal distinction between water that is derived from privately owned land versus any other water?
Yeah, I'm going to agree then. He's just, if you're asking for a factual question, I think he can answer that. I'm not sure why you need him to make a legal assertion.
Yeah, I'm not a legal expert, but I do know there's a 1938 agreement, as we cite in the EIS, that discusses that, and it's based on an ISO hiatal study.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how much water, what percent is actually derived from diversion structures on privately owned EMI land?
I do not know.
Does anyone?
I'm not sure.
why is the fact that 30% of the water in the license area streams derived from privately owned lands of any significance whatsoever worth mentioning the EIS?
It is for the purposes of the no action alternative. So if no water lease was issued, it is understood that 30% of the water that does flow through there that's derived from those privately owned lands could be diverted.
It is understood. Understood by whom?
The state and EMI.
Do you think the state of Hawaii believes and asserts that EMI is entitled to 30% of the water in the license area?
I can't speak for the state, but it's discussed in that 1938 agreement.
Okay, you can't speak for the state, but you just did. You said it was understood by the state. So now you agree, you have no basis for saying the state understands that 30% of the water is derived from privately owned lands. Correct?
Mr. Frankel, if you're trying to get him to say something differently from what he wrote or is written in the EIS, I'm not sure where you're going here.
I'm asking what the significance is of this. He just said the significance is because of this understanding. Now he acknowledges he doesn't know what the state knows. So I want to know this phrase, it is understood. Is that understanding actually just A and B and EMI's understanding?
It's what I picked up from the 1938 agreement.
Okay, that's what you picked up. All right.
Mr. Frankel, just for the record, did you provide questions to Mr. Beaupre in advance?
I did not. I would like to now move to page 2-21. Oops, shoot. There we go. You describe some infrastructure improvements to be made to the Kula Ag Park. Can you describe for us what those improvements are going to be?
I'm not sure. I just know it's to improve the efficiency of delivering water to Kula Ag Park.
You have no idea how that efficiency is going to be achieved.
No.
Do you have any idea when this is supposed to happen?
No.
And where did you get this information?
It is provided by our client.
From Mahipono or A and B?
A and B was our client.
Okay. You're aware that, stop sharing screen for a bit. You're aware that the Water Commission said that 20% transmission system losses are not acceptable, right? Do you remember the Water Commission saying that?
I do not.
You do not? Did you read the Water Commission's decision?
The 2018 Seymour and DNO?
Yes.
I did, but it was a long time ago.
So you don't recall reading anything about the need to reduce transmission losses?
I do not recall.
Does the EIS consider, what specific proposals did the EIS consider to reduce system losses, leakage, and waste?
What does the EIS propose to reduce that?
Yes.
Yeah, I believe in our alternatives chapter, we do discuss lining reservoirs and ditches as a potential alternative.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said as a potential alternative.
So just lining reservoirs and ditches. And does your EIS discuss, say, just lining one reservoir, two or three reservoirs as an option?
I do not recall.
How many reservoirs do you think are currently in use?
I do not know.
Well, let's bring this page up. On page 3-12, I don't know if you can bring this up a bit. You write seepage of water is not necessarily lost, right?
Yes.
How much of the water that seeps into the ground actually flows into the aquifer and stays there?
I do not know.
Okay. You believe that seepage of water into the ground is a reasonable use of water that comes from streams that are dewatered?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Is it reasonable to take water from streams, put them into reservoirs where they seep into the ground?
I'm not an expert, I'm not a hydrologist, I wouldn't know.
Okay, although you do say in your last sentence here, it can be stated the seepage, it can be stated, again, this is in the passive voice. I don't know who's stating it. It can be stated that seepage at the reservoirs is not deemed as a waste of water due to its contribution to recharging the aquifer. That's what you wrote.
Correct. I also said that the EIS was helped prepared by technical experts, and this came from our technical expert.
Which technical expert?
Akinaka and Associates. Okay.
Do you know if contributions to the groundwater outweigh the cost of the streams?
I do not know.
EIS, I should maybe turn to that page. EIS says that losses do not take place within the EMI aqueduct system. There's no net seepage loss in the EMI aqueduct system up to the Kamoli Weir. You call writing that?
Yes.
Have you actually read the USGS report that discusses this?
I have.
You have read that report?
Yes.
Is there anywhere in that report that it says there's no net loss?
I do not recall.
Is there anywhere in that report that says it's not worth lining those, the ditches?
I do not recall.
If that report does not say that there's no net system loss, have you misrepresented that report?
Jack is calling for speculation, hypothetical.
Yeah, Mr. Frankel, I think it'd be best if you stuck to asking him factual questions.
It is a factual question. My question is, if this statement here in the EIS is not reflected in the USGS report, has he misrepresented what the USGS study said?
Same objection. He's assuming facts that he hasn't established, that it's not there. So that's an improper hypothetical. It calls for speculation.
I'll join the objection.
Those are not appropriate objections in a contested case hearing. he can answer.
Could you please explain why you think it's okay?
Why the question's okay?
Yeah. What is your response to the objections?
My response to the objections is those objections have no basis in a contested case hearing. He claims the statements in the EIS are true and accurate. The USGS study says nothing of the kind. A and B, for years now, has been attempting to make this representation, which is complete shabai. The statement is not found in that report at all. Nothing like that is said in the report. That was not the purpose of the report. It doesn't say that. He claims he's read the report.
May I respond to that? I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
You know, whatever the report says, it says. I mean, you know, asking him to speculate about what might be or what might not be, he's claiming that there's not in there. Well, put the report in and argue from the report. Don't badger this witness about it.
Oops. Mr. Beaupre, do you see the USGS study on your screen now?
Yes.
Can you point me to the page where it says there's no net seepage loss in the EMI ditch system?
I couldn't do that.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Okay, A and B.
I have no questions.
County Maui.
I have no questions for this witness. Thanks.
All right. Are we done? All right. Mr. Beaupre, thank you for your time this morning. And you're welcome to stay and turn off your video and audio and listen, or you can go on your merry way for the day.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. We have Mr. Tanaka next. Do we need a break or anything? Nope.
I would just like to ask Mr. Frankel if he would like to speak with, or do you still want to call Mr. Chen?
So as I mentioned yesterday, I guess you weren't involved. We're going to go through Wayne Tanaka. I'm going to need 10 minutes after that to think about it. I told you that I'd send you an email. So I'll let everybody here on the Zoom know, and I'll send you an email.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to proceed. It is, let me just check the time here, 9:25 a.m. We are going to proceed with Mr. Tanaka, and it's a Sierra Club witness. So Linda Chow, would you please swear in our witness, Mr. Tanaka?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Tanaka. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do. Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Tanaka, have you signed a declaration in this matter?
Yes.
And are the statements in it true and accurate as far as you know?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Circle turns Wayne Tanaka over to the folks to cross-examine.
Okay, A and B.
Yes, it's David Schillmeister on behalf of A and B and EMI. Good morning,
Mr. Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Schillmeister.
Okay. I'd just like to begin by asking a general question about whether the Sierra Club supports agriculture in the state of Hawaii.
Yeah, I think, local food production is something that we've spotted.
All right. And does the Sierra Club, recognize the constitutional mandate to the state and subdivisions to promote diversified agriculture, increase agricultural self-sufficiency, and conserve agricultural lands?
As a constitution provision?
Yes.
I'm not sure about the exact language, but I'm aware that there's agricultural provisions in the Constitution.
Okay. And is Sierra Club in support of the return of agriculture to important agricultural lands in central Maui?
I don't know if we've taken a position, formal position on that.
Okay. So, so you're not sure whether the Sierra Club does or does not support the return of important agricultural lands in central Maui to agricultural use?
I haven't looked at, I just started this position in October. I have to look at our, you know, our records to see if we've taken a formal position in that particular policy.
Okay. You know, one of the things that the you did in your in your written testimonies, you refer to a table that you prepared, exhibit Y-1. You remember that?
Yes.
Okay. And in this exhibit, what was the point that you were trying to make when you prepared this table?
I was trying to condense the information provided in the quarterly reports regarding water use so that we can understand how water was used and not used.
And in one of the positions that the Sierra Club has taken in this case is that Mahipono is wasting water because the system losses are in excess of the 22.7% that is discussed in the CWRM 2018 decision and order. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Okay. Now, have you read the portions of the 2018 decision and order that discuss how the 22.7% was derived?
A long time ago, I can't really recall the specifics.
Okay. Well, do you recall that, and if you want to refer to it, it's exhibit Y-46. And perhaps, actually, could we, Nicole, could you put Y-46 up and scroll to page 182?
So are you just talking about 182 of the PDF or 182 of the document?
Actually, it was 182 of the document, the page number on the bottom.
So that's 205 of the PDF.
That's right. So actually, if you can scroll further to page 192 of the document, which is 215 of the PDF, and there's a paragraph, there's paragraph 729 and 730. I just wanted you to take a look at that. There's a discussion there about how HCNS obtained a benchmark against which the 22.7% rate could be compared based on seepage and evaporation. Do you see that discussion? It goes from page 730, paragraph 730, and it continues on the next page.
Okay.
All right. Now, I noticed from your direct testimony that you are an engineer. Is that right?
Yes, I have a bachelor's in general engineering.
Okay. And so when when we talk about calculating evaporation, you know, based on exposed surface area, in order to derive an estimate of evaporation for like water in ditches and reservoirs, I mean, you have a general understanding of how that works, right?
Sure, that's surface area is a factor in that phase transitions.
Okay. And as far as, and when we're talking about evaporation, I mean, the more exposed surface area there is of a body of water in relation to the volume of the water, then the higher the rate of evaporation will be as a percentage of the volume, correct?
More surface area plus volume.
Let me withdraw the question.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's correct. But
ask okay. Another way. If you had a glass of water, okay, and you were trying to calculate how much evaporation was to be expected from the glass of water, you'd look at the surface area, uncovered surface area in the glass, and then, you know, the, and you look at the volume of the water to develop, you know, how the evaporation, what the rate of the evaporation is relative to the volume of water, correct?
Sure. As a factor, it's one factor, yes.
Right. And if you poured the water from the glass into a plate, so that now, you know, it's very shallow, but there's a lot of surface area, then because the proportion of surface area to the total volume is now higher, then you're going to have a higher rate of evaporation, right? As a percentage of the amount of water.
As a percentage of the amount of water, yes.
Okay. And you understand that that's basically the sort of calculation that was done as described in the DNO when an estimate was made of evaporation in terms of HCNS's operations.
Again, that's one factor. I'm not sure what other, you know, temperature, there's other things that, and pressure, there's other things that influence evaporation rates.
Right. I mean, the pan evaporation rate would be a factor, but then that'd be multiplied by the surface area, right?
I'm not sure if multiplication is the right function, but yeah, there might be some.
Well, let's put it this way. You understand, and this is sort of intuitively obvious, whether you're an engineer or not, that if you had a glass of water, the amount of evaporation you're going to have from that glass of water over the course of a day, all right, is going to be less than if you pour it into a plate where there's more interaction with the atmosphere, correct?
Yes.
And with seepage, seepage is calculated in relationship to the wetted surface area of the vessel that's holding the water. So in the case of the plantation, it would be the wetted surface area of the ditches where water is being carried, and the portion of the reservoir that's in contact with the water, right?
Again, there's multiple factors that affect rate of seepage, not just, you know, area that's wetted.
But the area that's wetted is a prime factor in doing the calculation, correct? The surface area that's wetted.
There's other, like porosity is, you know, I think, I'm not sure if that's more significant effects than things like porosity and substrate composition.
And the substrate is a different factor. I'm just talking about, I mean, you have to determine what the material of the wall is, which is what the Department of Agricultural Handbook provides. So if it's earth or if it's concrete or if it's something else. But then in terms of forecasting what the total amount of seepage is, you still have to multiply it by the surface area that the water is in contact with, right?
Sure, flux will, yeah. That's a factor in flux through material.
Okay, and in general, if you have the same vessel the more water that's in it, you know, in terms of the depth of the water, then the higher, I mean, the more seepage you're going to have. The lower the rate of seepage is going to be. Now, let me withdraw that question. So if what you're concerned about is the percentage of evaporation, the percentage of seepage, then that's going to vary in terms of what the total volume is of the vessel also, right?
Sure, percentage loss will be, right, based on what water is lost and versus what water, you know, was there in the first place.
All right. And so, I mean, just to take an extreme example, if the Wailoa Ditch, which has a capacity of 200 million gallons a day, if you went to the Honopo Stream and where the Wailoa Ditch crosses Honopo Stream, and it was dry, and you took a glass of water and you poured it into the Wailoa Ditch, the rate of evaporation and seepage that would occur before it would reach miles further west to come only where would probably be 100%, right?
So percentage loss is maybe one way to think about a standard for what we think is acceptable or not. I think if you just look at the hard numbers, you're looking at, you know, inputting millions and millions of gallons of water per day into reservoirs that are not used, and yet somehow the reservoirs aren't overfilling, right? So you're literally losing, you know, in many cases, over half of the water that's been diverted. I think if you look at the table, you'll see that except for a handful of quarters, you're going to see the majority of the time you're losing, you know, something like half or even more, like up to 80% of the water that's diverted.
Now, looking again at exhibit Y46, there's a discussion of what the gross irrigation requirement is, and there's a calculation that basically takes the gross irrigation requirement and then accounts for the 22.7% as expected system loss. And that discussion starts on page there's some tables that are listed on page 185. And there's footnotes that talk about how the gross and net irrigation requirements are calculated. You see that?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yes.
All right. So at the irrigation requirement is discussed at the top of the page of 89.23 MGD. And you know, the net irrigation requirement. I'm sorry, it's 89.23. That would, so basically what the DNO is saying is the expected system loss at that rate would be like 26 million gallons per day. Is that right?
Yeah, roughly, yeah. Okay. 26.23.
Now, if the, and you understand that this is a very large system in terms of the infrastructure, correct?
Right, yes.
And so doesn't it stand to reason that if you have a large system like this and the total amount of water you're putting in, the volume you're putting in is contacting a similar amount of surface area, but it's a much smaller volume. So the seepage and evaporation for a small amount of water is necessarily going to be a much higher percentage than it would be for a large volume of water.
Yes.
Right. And that's why, for example, if you took Mr. Frankel's glass of water that he likes to talk about, and you poured it into the Wailoa Ditch when it was dry at Honopo's stream, 100% of it would be lost to seepage and evaporation, right? It would never reach Kamali Weir, correct?
Sure.
Okay. So now over time, now Mahipono's water use compared to what was being used during sugar is a very small fraction of what was used during sugar, correct?
I'm
talking about the water diverted. The diverted amount, let's say if it's 25 MGD, I mean, that's over 100 million gallons a day less than the average diversion during sugar cultivation, correct?
Oh, that's my understanding.
So if during sugar cultivation, the seepage and evaporation was, you know, being related to the volume of water, which would be water several deep in the ditches, water several feet deep in reservoirs. I mean, doesn't it just stand to reason that if you reduce that amount of water by the volume of water greatly, so there's just a shallower amount of water in the ditch, that you can have more evaporation and generally more seepage in relation to the volume of water that's being transported?
So I don't know. Well, yes, but you're also, I mean, I don't know why we're shooting for maximum loss. Like, why would we? You'd also be able to reduce, no matter what, you'd reduce loss, waste of water, a public trust resource, if you invested in the improvements that would prevent seepage and prevent evaporation, whether wholesale or incrementally.
All right, but I mean, wouldn't that apply no matter what the seepage and evaporation rate is? In other words, wouldn't that apply equally to any system? In theory, you could reduce it by some amount, right?
Right. So So let's do that here.
Yeah. So if you're looking at industry, you know, standards or whatever, the DNO said that the 26 million gallons per day expected loss from seepage and evaporation, if you're importing 115 million gallons a day, that was within industry standards, right? And that's what's expected when you look at the material that the water is seeping through, and when you look at the evaporation rate on the surface area of the water.
Sure, but again, we're looking at like 15 to 20 million gallons of water per day. That's like entire streams that you could be restoring. You know, system loss is one metric, but there's just absolute, there's just basic quantities of water that represent significant, you know, habitat units, you know, whatever other metrics you want to look at that are being unnecessarily lost.
Well,
this antiquated water diversion system.
All right. So the 26 million gallons per day that was, you know, forecast as the expected seepage or system loss, what you're saying, Sierra Club is saying that you disagree with the CWRM's decision and order saying that that was an acceptable amount for, the projections that HCNS had given for its diversified ag plan that are the subject of these paragraphs.
Sorry, could you repeat that question?
You know, I'm going to withdraw that question. In terms of, currently the amount of water that's being diverted is, again, a very small percentage of what was diverted during sugar. And the absolute value of the amount that's being lost to seepage and evaporation is still less as an absolute value than what was lost during sugar cultivation, correct?
Sure. I don't think sugar cultivation, the amount of water diverted for sugar cultivation was also not necessarily an acceptable amount either, even when sugar was in cultivation.
And you can have a higher rate of system loss for a lower volume of water diverted, but actually you could be taking less water from the streams, right?
Uh, Sure.
Right. So focusing on the rate, the percentage is really not what's most important for the streams. What's important for the streams, and you might have alluded to this a little earlier, was just the absolute value of the water that's being removed, right?
What's important to the streams is that water that is taken from them be put to reasonable beneficial uses and not wasted. And the quantities of water being wasted would be able to provide substantial benefits otherwise to the public trust purposes of the streams that are being dewatered.
But the current trajectory is that the amount of water that's being taken from the streams is multitudes less than what used to be taken, right?
Mr. Schulmeister, can I just pause here? I think this was all covered in the trial. Okay. Is there something new that you're trying to cover here?
I can move on. I mean, I think that we probably.
I have a question while we're on this topic, and that is, Mr. Tanaka, I think you said that they should invest in improvements to reduce seepage and evaporation, which, again, I think we covered in the trial, but we had earlier discussion about fire, availability of water in reservoirs for fire by both to fight fires using helicopters and buckets, et cetera, with Maui Police and Division of Forestry and Wildlife. So is there, I'm not sure what you're thinking about to reduce evapotranspiration, but are you thinking about a cover on a reservoir? And I'm curious about what that would do for the availability of water and fighting fires. And I want to note for the record, Ms. Dene entered the meeting room.
I can't talk to like how you could potentially engineer ways to cover reservoirs that would still allow access for, say, helicopter collection of water. You could designate certain reservoirs to be covered and some to not be covered, but you know, again, aligning them is important so that the water, you know, remains available. I mean, there's, you know, my understanding is from the earlier testimony was that there was something like 9 or so reservoirs that have been used in 2021. You don't have to cover all of them, but you know, you start somewhere, cover some of them, line some of them. These are reasonable investments considering that the diversion of water under so-called temporary revocable permits has been ongoing continuously since the 1980s. To begin the process of investing in
no, I'm specifically wondering about how you make sure water is available in the chaos of fighting a fire without having to, you know, roll back a top or check to see which reservoirs have water in them or that kind of thing. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So I don't know. I don't think that we even know how much water needs to be available for firefighting. I feel like that was a condition that the board imposed that was not fulfilled. So not knowing that quantity, it's hard to say. You'd have to, once you know the quantity, then you can figure out what reservoirs you might want to designate as firefighting reservoirs and then make sure that they're easily accessible in whatever manner, while also ensuring that they're not, you know, losing millions of gallons of water per day into the ground.
Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Schulmeister, please continue.
Okay, and I'm not going to be much longer. So is it the Sarah Close position that all earthen dam reservoirs in the state of Hawaii should be lined and covered?
If dewatered, water is taken out of the watershed, and deposited into reservoirs in the order of, you know, over 10 million gallons of water per day, and that water is not used, I think it's fair to say our position is that water is wasted, and therefore that's in contravention to the public trust.
So, like, should Lake Wilson be covered in lime in order to prevent seepage and evaporation from the streams that contribute to Lake Wilson, the reservoir in Wahiawa?
We'd have to look at the public trust and reasonable beneficial uses of the water that's deposited there to make an analysis as to whether that's, you know, an appropriate situation.
Or what about the reservoirs that the Nuuana, the Department of Water Supply for Oahu maintains and operates? Should they be covered in line?
So the public trust doctrine, it requires specific analyses, right? Like the versions, particularly that benefit private entities, they need to be, the justification needs to be quantified and balanced. And so it's a case-by-case analysis. And that's what we've been asking for, and that many folks have been asking for with regards to these RPs.
Are you saying that because Mahipono is a private entity, that there's a different standard that applies to whether reservoirs need to be lined or covered than it would for the Department of Water Supply?
When a private entity takes public trust resources, then there's a burden that the Supreme Court has, you know, stated, has established, that puts the onus on them to justify that diversion of water.
Is the groundwater that's contained in Hawaii's aquifers a public trust resource?
All water in Hawaii is a public trust resource.
So that includes the water contained in groundwater aquifers, right?
Yes.
And in fact, I think the Sierra Club has been very noticeably active in trying to protect aquifers on Oahu from fuel contamination at Red Hill, correct?
Correct.
Now, is the surface water that's imported from East Maui that seeps into the central Maui aquifers, does it harm those aquifers?
Is it what in those aquifers? Sorry.
Does the water from streams in East Maui that's imported to central Maui and seeps from the reservoirs into the central Maui aquifers, is that harming those aquifers?
So the public trust doctrine requires that the water uses be prioritized for certain things, right? So public trust purposes, one of which is the maintenance of waters in a natural state. So diverting and dewatering streams is in direct contradiction to one of the four public trust purposes that have been identified by the Supreme Court.
Okay. My question is whether water that seeps into the aquifer in central Maui from the reservoirs, I'm asking you whether, you've already, you know, indicated that it's a public trust, the aquifers are a public trust resource. And what I'm asking you is whether water that seeps into them from the reservoirs, whether that's harming them. That's my question. Is it harming them?
I can't see how that, I don't know the hydrogeology and whether it, you know, how it may impact the, you know, the whatever situation is down under the ground in central Mali.
I mean, certainly not like leaching fuel into these aquifers. It's not harming them in that sense, right?
Sure, water isn't as bad as fuel.
Right, and does it in fact benefit the aquifers to be getting some recharge?
Sure, but you have to also consider, you know, balance the benefits to central Mali with the need for water in East Maui.
All right, so it's a lot of factors that have to be considered, right?
Sure.
And you familiar with the submittal, the staff submittal for the November 13th meeting when it talks about the effect of pumping groundwater from central Maui for agriculture? Do you recall that discussion? That's exhibit Y22.
Yeah, I'm somewhat familiar with the, sorry.
On page 14, and this is of the document, I'm not sure if that matches the PDF, but exhibit Y22 on page 14, in the second full paragraph, there's a discussion about that. Do you see, can we share that so we can look at it? Exhibit Y22, page 14. And I'd like to direct your attention specifically to the second half of that paragraph. This is the second full paragraph on page 14. So it first it starts by saying CWRM. Do you see that?
Yes.
And it's talking about the on the fourth line, there's a sentence that starts near the right of the page. According to comments from SeaWorm's groundwater division, central Maui or the Kahului aquifer system area has an estimated sustainable yield of 1 million gallons a day based on natural conditions. However, this does not include the historic or continued importation of water from both EMI and Wailuku Water, which historically exceeded an average of 200 MGD and undoubtedly contributes to return irrigation recharge of very low salinity water. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
And the groundwater in the area is not overly brackish, actually quite good, to the point where the county is relying on some wells for potable needs. You see that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, and there's other wells that share these aquifers besides those that are available to Mahipono, correct?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. And so water seeping into these aquifers, which are a public trust resource, benefits them, right?
I don't know. I don't know what the hydrogeology looks like under the ground. Like there's a lot of proposal arrangements that would affect the benefit, if any, of recharge through seepage.
Okay, but that is relevant to the balancing that should be taking place, correct?
Sure, but we don't know, so it's going to be hard to factor that into the balancing.
I don't have any further questions.
Okay, Maui County.
I have no questions for this witness. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Frankel.
Thank you. Mr. Tanaka, you've had a pretty busy couple of weeks, haven't you?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Mr. Schulmeister mentioned something about the Sierra Club's involvement in Red Hill. Has that taken up a bit of your time this past couple of weeks?
Yes.
And is the Sierra Sierra Club involved in a couple contested case hearings regarding Red Hill?
Yes.
And those hearings were before the Department of Health, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And was the Department of Health on the Sierra Club side in terms of the need to take drastic action regarding the Navy's activities at Red Hill before the contested case hearing began, the first contested case hearing?
Not necessarily.
Has the Department of Health's attitude changed somewhat since the Red Hill contested case hearing began?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Hope that's the case in this one as well. I see. Mr. Schulmeister was asking about water that seeps into the ground. Mr. Tanaka, how much of the water that seeps into the ground in central Maui, actually both reaches the aquifer and stays in the aquifer?
I have no idea.
And has any evidence, you've been listening to almost all this contested case hearing, has any evidence been presented at all that discusses what percentage of the water that actually seeps into the ground both reaches the aquifer and stays there for future use?
I have not heard of any.
Okay. Do you know if Lake Wilson, I think that's, is Lake Wilson the name of that lake in Wahiawa?
Yeah, the current, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So do Lake Wilson and the Board of Water Supplies reservoir in Nu'uanu, do they get their water from diverting and completely dewatering any streams?
I don't think so.
All right. Okay, I want to turn your attention now to the Water Commission's decision that Mr. Schulmeister, whoops, is that it? Put up for you. And I want to call your attention to, so this is exhibit Y46, and I want to turn your attention to paragraph 737. Do you see that there on your screen?
Yes.
So let me read it and tell me if I've read it correctly. Thus, HCNS's system losses of 22%, 41.67 million gallons of 183.61 million gallons per day of surface water diverted and groundwater pumped, were reasonable losses under sugarcane cultivation. Because the same distribution system would be used for diversified agriculture, the same rate of 22.7% losses should be applicable. Do you see that?
Yes.
Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
Do you see any footnote there at all that says more than this rate can be lost until the land is fully cultivated? Is there a footnote like that there?
I do not see any footnote.
And as far as you know, did Alexander and Baldwin, as far as you know, did they appeal the Water Commission's decision?
My recollection was that they did not.
So if they were unhappy about this finding 737 and its use of the word rate, they could have done so, but they didn't, right?
I guess not.
Okay, so I want to talk to you a little bit about this paragraph. Now, I know that Mr. Schulmeister asked you about being an engineer, but I think I want to go back to lower level math. You went to, what high school did you go to?
I went to Punahou.
Along with several other people in this proceeding or their offspring. And at Punahou, did you learn about the words or the concepts of percentage and rate and fractions?
Yes.
And are those all essentially equivalent terms, a percentage, a fraction, and a rate?
Sure, yes.
So what happens when you have a percentage, a fraction, or rate, when the denominator increases, what happens to the numerator?
You mean what happens to the rate?
No. So if you're keeping the rate the same, sorry, good point. Very good point. If you're keeping the rate the same and you're using a fraction, if the denominator increases, what has to happen to the numerator?
It also has to increase.
And if the denominator decreases, if you're using a rate, percentage, or fraction, what happens to the numerator?
Decreases.
Okay. So if A and B is taking less water now, as an absolute number, the number that they're allowed to lose, would that increase or decrease?
Decrease would be less.
But the rate stays the same, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, I know you've been really busy with the Red Hill matter the last couple of weeks. Do you recall what the Water Commission decided was an appropriate amount of loss that Mahipono could have for irrigating its crops using Navajo water.
Mr. Frankel, I'm going to say the same thing. Can you please make sure you're covering new material here?
I don't believe that decision was reached during the trial. I don't think the Navajo decision. I mean, we can look at the date on the decision, but I'm pretty sure it came out after August 2020.
No, I'm talking about the whole discussion of the Seaworm decision in 2018. Are you done with that?
My question that I just asked was whether Mr. Tanaka was aware of the Water Commission's decision regarding the amount of water that could be wasted using the Navajo water and that rate. And if you don't recall, Mr. Tanaka, that's fine. But do you remember?
No, but in this exhibit that's on the screen, 734, it talks about 5% losses as equivalent of 5% of irrigation requirements.
Okay, well, I didn't even notice that. Good point. Finally, screen. Do we know which reservoirs both DOFA or the fire department has used, would like to use to fight fires in Central Maui?
I don't know.
Have you heard any evidence presented by A&B in this contested case hearing that discusses which reservoirs need to have water in them so that we can fight fires?
I don't recall.
Thank you. I don't have any more questions.
Okay, are we done with Mr. Tanaka?
I don't have any further questions.
Okay, all right, Mr. Tanaka, thank you very much. Appreciate all your time this morning. And you're free to stay and just turn off your video. But Mr. Frankel, you wanted to take a 10-minute recess and decide about your next witness who is available at 2 o'clock.
Let's take a 10 minute recess. Okay.
So we'll come back say around 10:20.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, I think we're back. It's 10:20, and Mr. Frankel, you're just going to let us know if you want to call a witness this afternoon or not.
No need to. Thank you.
All right. Then that brings us to a close for today. And so we're going to have closing arguments tomorrow at 9 a.m., correct? And we agreed half hour each, up to a half an hour each. And so we'll start at 9 a.m. We'll go EMI, AMB, and then County, and then Sierra Club. And then that'll be it for this part of this proceeding. Okay, great. Anything else? Nope.
So you want the findings of fact conclusions of, I don't know if we're going to discuss this today or tomorrow, but you want the findings of fact conclusions of law on by December 22nd, right?
I don't remember what dates we talked about. Does anybody have that?
It's 1 week after the last hearing date.
All right, so that would be next Wednesday. So 21 and 7 is, no.
It's the 22nd. Next week Wednesday is the 22nd.
Okay, I'm counting years. Okay.
And then what's the thinking after that?
I am not sure, so we will reconnoiter and maybe we can talk about it after the closing arguments tomorrow, just to be clear on the next steps.
Okay. It might make sense for us to either have some sort of discussion after Friday's court hearing, because I think it's fairly likely that the deadline for the revocable permit, for the revocable permits, I think are likely to be extended in their time frame. And it might make some sense to talk about how we want to proceed given that after the hearing. Anyway, you can talk about all the implications and we can maybe talk about the tomorrow or think about setting up a time when we all talk on Friday.
Okay. All right. We're good for the day then. I'm going to turn off the recording and we'll see you all tomorrow. Have a good day.
Thank you.